Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, April 21st.
Good morning.
Good morning. And, you know, I'm saying good morning, but some people are listening to it at night. So they're going to have to get used to the idea that we're here in the morning.
Right.
That's why we greet them with good morning.
Right.
Or maybe we should greet them with good evening and good night, just so people will feel like they belong.
Or just hey.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hey, what's up, man?
We're here. Whatever time of day you're listening, it's us. You chose to listen, so.
Are you doing a Periscope of the show today?
No.
You should do one like that's a short one so we can save it and see.
All right.
Don't you want to do one?
I'll do it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So don't do a long one, like just a couple minutes.
Okay.
And you know what? Wait till we have our guest on. We have to ask her if she wants to be on the camera too and everything.
Okay, good. She says yes.
We have a special guest. We'll bring her in just a minute. And there's a few things happening. Did you hear that Roseanne Barr revealed that she's going blind?
No.
Yeah. How sad is that, man?
Very.
It's very scary. I mean, she says she has macular degeneration and glaucoma. And, wow, that's scary. My dad says we have glaucoma in the family.
Oh, no.
And he's got it. But I guess you can get, like, surgery or something for it. And, you know, then it's not so bad.
Yeah.
But to feel you're losing your vision is so depressing. My God.
Don't they say that smoking pot helps with that?
Well, that's what they're talking about.
Is that where we're going?
You know me pretty well by now.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. I have figured you out.
She does say that smoking marijuana is good medicine for relieving the pressure in her eyes. And I can imagine. But she says, you know, I mean, just think about this. She says, you know, I won't be able to read. I love to read and stuff. I mean, I'd go out of my mind.
Yeah.
You know?
And there's nothing they can do about it?
No. I guess not. Yeah, it's degenerative, so I guess it doesn't ever get better. It just gets worse.
Sad.
Yeah, I know. I really feel bad for her. You know, it can't be good for anybody to lose their vision. I mean, you know, it's just and you become so dependent on it in your life. I think it's easily the most relied upon sense that we have.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So that's pretty sad. And I don't know, man. The more I hear about people, you know, being sick and dying and stuff, it's starting to scare me, man.
Really?
I'm starting to be scared of a lot of things. But
yes.
I don't know what the hell's going on. But let me ask you this. There was a picture on Facebook, a controversial one, and they showed, I don't know if you get to see it, it's a black and white picture, an artistic picture. And they're showing a man lying on his stomach naked. His wife, supposedly, or a woman, is on top of him, lying in the same position on her stomach, on him, though.
Uh-huh.
And then three kids piled on top of him,
okay,
all naked. Do you think there's something wrong with that picture?
I don't know. Are they a part of a nudist colony?
Well, that's a good question. Somebody did mention nudists, but the thing is, somebody said, I mean, people were saying, is this okay? Is this not okay? So I don't think it has to do with whether you're a nudist or not, but whether it's appropriate or not.
Right.
You know, and I mean, would you be offended if you saw a picture like that?
No.
Yeah. You see, neither would I.
Doesn't take a, I mean, I'm not offended easily.
Right.
So, and I don't usually care what other people are doing as long as it's not harming or murdering or like that kind of thing.
But that's, the question is, are they harming their kids that way? You know, I mean, the question is, because, I mean, it is kind of like a tricky one because on the one hand, you go, this is a family, you know? I mean,
right,
they should feel okay with themselves and celebrating the human body, you know? I just don't understand people that live in fear of seeing the human body naked. You know, so, but the problem with it is they end up with their genitals on top of each other.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of a, you know, I mean, I don't know where the kids stand on that, but again, I don't think it would be, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think people need to celebrate nudity, and I think there's a difference between nudity and sex.
Right.
You know, sex is action, and nudity is just the way we are. It's being.
Right.
You know, so, you know, if it's not presented pornographically or anything in a way that that is reserved for behind closed doors, it seems like a pretty artistic picture, you know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they thought it was cool.
Yeah.
But,
you know, then I was wondering if it's because they're all blonde, blue eyes, handsome and pretty and things like this. What if you put a bunch of, like, kind of an ugly fat family there.
Then that would go under awkward family photos.
Yeah.
Have you seen those that are posted? It's like always one person looking in the wrong direction, or like they're dressed in like Sears clothes at the Sears photo studio.
Yeah, I know.
Those are the best.
Do they still do those?
Yeah. I actually was in an ensemble cast at Second City, and we went and had our group photo done.
Oh,
and that was our our promo photos were like us looking in different directions, or like all trying to kill each other, or staring in the, like, facing the back wall instead of the front wall. Or trying to look like Fabio on the cover of like
one of those romance novels. Yeah.
So it was fun.
Yeah.
I recommend doing it once if you've never done it.
Really?
Going and getting your picture done.
Yeah. Yeah, Fabio is a pretty cool guy. I mean, he's been to the station a couple times.
Really?
I met him. And yeah, I mean, he's pretty tall, obviously, and big and stuff. But yeah, you know, he's, to me, he's sort of like a caricature, you know, because I think he takes himself too seriously for what he does, you know.
I almost feel like he's like a superhero. Yeah. Cafe Med.
But by now, he's much older than we remember him as, you know.
Hey,
but
he looks really similar.
Yeah.
He ages well.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, some people. I guess for men, they say it's easier to age, right?
I think so.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't say.
You have a thing with age.
Well, I do.
You do.
I do. Because I'm of age. You know, it doesn't matter where you look at it. 50s is considered old. And but you know what the interesting thing is? I remember before I lived in LA, I lived in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, 70s and everything. And remember Vegas, everybody checks you out. Everybody looks at you when you pass by. And then I would come here to visit and go to the mall or something where people walk, and people don't even notice you. You know, so LA is a tough place. You know, you have to get used to it. Although, you know, once you get used to it, I guess you do find that people notice you and things like that, you know, so it just depends.
See, and when I got here, I thought, like, why is everybody staring?
Really?
Yeah, like, it's so annoying. Do what you're doing.
Yeah.
Stop staring.
That's
I'm not
funny.
Famous. Like,
right.
Don't, like be involved in whatever you've got going on.
Yeah, but, yeah, you know, but it doesn't work that way. I mean, men are on the hunt all the time.
No, it was everybody. It wasn't just
everybody,
men.
Even women were looking at
stairs.
Well, you're a beautiful woman.
Thanks.
So people appreciate that.
But it was like, I felt more like, who are you? Do I know you? Are you going to make me famous? Are you going to help me in my career? Are you famous? Like, a lot of that. And I was like, lay off. Put your eyes back in your head.
Oh, wow. It's amazing how...
And it's all perspective.
Really funny. It really is, you know. And I was thinking about one person's garbage is another person's lunch, you know. And I was in Hollywood the other day, and I'm seeing this guy picking through the trash. And I thought, my God, you know, people throw away food. And some people actually look for that.
Yeah. Speaking of, I don't know, the earth and trash and all that, tomorrow's Earth Day.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay. What are we going to do about it?
Say that it's Earth Day.
Okay.
I don't know. Bring in...
Be conscious of what's going on.
Yeah, by the way, they said that if you cut out red meat and only eat it one day a week, you are actually saving water.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because so we don't have to have as many animals and livestock and stuff?
No, I think
why?
We need animals to help the world, but to keep the grass green or whatever they do, because then they make the manure and the whole thing.
Right.
But circle of life. But I think it had to do with, like, the processing part.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we get thirstier when we eat in the morning, so you're prepared for the day.
Yeah, I love it.
With the
I wake up with my morning show friends.
Uh-huh.
People must think about us like that. I don't know. I think of Savannah Guthrie, Willie Geist, Matt Lauer, Natalie Morales, and Tamron Hall as that for me.
Hmm. That's the group that's there?
And Al
that's
Roker. The team? Can't forget Al Roker. Al Tells Roker. Me the weather.
Yeah. And he's amazing. I remember when he used to be overweight. Remember that?
Yeah.
And now he's like so skinny. He looks like a different person.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, his face
but
is
like that
a whole
while.
Different face.
Yeah. And that happens. You know, if you noticed Al Sharpton, too, lost a lot of weight.
Yep.
And he looks different now.
It's true.
His face is totally different. So it's... So it's a big deal, I guess, when people lose a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And stuff. It changes the way you look.
It does.
Yeah. Wow. And we're going to get to, I guess, in just a second. But, you know, we were talking about airlines the other day.
Yeah.
And do you have a favorite?
Ugly. It's the worst.
Right.
It is
well,
the
worst.
Well,
it's a pretty regional airline, though, right? Like on the East Coast, I think. I don't think
we
see
I've flown it across
here.
Country.
Really?
Yeah. Because it used to be a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
Now it's not that much cheaper, and it's worse.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
Wow.
So.
Yeah.
I don't recommend it.
Yeah. United Airlines is still low, number 8.
I don't like them either.
Yeah. So the top 3 is JetBlue, Southwest Airlines, and Alaska Airlines. And then, you know, some of the bigger ones are lower on the list. And
Kevin Roos, the author of Young Money, mm-hmm. he writes for New York Magazine, and he followed a group of, he's a young guy himself, these people who are like 28 and phenomenally successful. Uh-huh. I really resent them. Anyway, I want to say something about age, but Kevin followed or kind of met regularly with a group of college graduates who had just graduated from top Ivy League schools and gone right into Wall Street. Wow. And the question, middle-aged women, let's say. Mm. And I sort of feel like my own superhero because they say that middle-aged women are kind of invisible in modern society. Mm. It's sort of...
What?
It is, yeah. And, I mean,
it's
they
hard.
Shouldn't be.
Oh, would, you're yeah, feeding into Sam's issues.
No,
with
no,
you.
We were talking about this too. I mean, no. Yeah. Jen, imagine being a woman in her 50s, divorced, you know, and they're not the top desirable ones,
right?
You know, because everybody looks for younger women, you know.
Right.
So it's hard. I mean, it's hard for a man too, you know. So
well, I see. I believe that all men have to do if they're, you know, spiffed out and looking, you know, clean and presentable. Just walk out on the street and or go to any bar and you will find women.
Right.
For men, they can find
that's what
women
I'm saying.
Younger than themselves.
That's what I'm saying.
Open up a Match.com account for me. Would you ever trust your adult? You have adult kids, right?
Yes.
You would never trust them to set you up.
No.
No.
No, why would I
try
want
and help.
That?
I try. I Sam, don't I help you?
Yes.
See?
Yes.
What are friends for?
But
exactly.
We're talking about kids, you know, so.
Exactly, exactly. Well, and my daughter's 15. She said, who knows you better, Mom?
Uh-huh.
Who knows you better?
She's yeah. not wrong.
She, well, that's true. That's true. But her fantasy or her goal for me might not be mine, so.
That's yeah. true.
But as far as, what was I talking about? For women, yeah, there's a certain invisibility factor to being middle-aged and a woman, particularly in L.A., but I sort of embrace it, and I feel like I could sort of slide under doors, I could go anywhere, I could, you know,
yeah.
I'm not going to, like, walk into a bank and commit a crime,
right?
But you sort of feel like
I
you
might.
Can walk along, yeah, but you know, but yeah. But I really, it's one of the blessings that you can just sort of relax and not be judged.
Right.
It's a sort of lack of judgment. It's sort of the polar opposite of what you were describing. But this is what you have to look forward to, Jen.
Can't wait.
Well, so that's why you want to stay married and in a relationship in your 50s so you don't have to deal with these
right.
things, you know.
Yes.
But it's...
Only one person to judge me instead of many.
But, you know, the thing is that at the same time, though, I think if a woman makes herself visible and known,
yeah.
and, you know, it takes... So that's why she's got to count on her personality even more,
right.
you know, to... to make a statement. It's exactly. Like, look, I'm here and this is what I can do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can probably do it better than you because I've got experience and everything, you know, to younger people. So, yeah, you know, I mean, it's this, I think it does boil down to attitude, and Jen says that all the time, you know.
Well, and I mean, many of them, many are not, unfortunately, but there used to be, I mean, I think among women in their 40s, you know, 50s even, but, well, rarely, but for women in their 30s and 40s, feminism for a while became like the, I don't know, something to shy away from. It sounded militant or it sounded off-putting, which never should have been the case. I think that that word and that movement is being reclaimed by a lot of young women. And I've seen that on campuses. There are feminist clubs at high schools. And it's a sense of we're talking about equal rights.
Right.
We're talking about, you know, the right to simply be in the world and live and work and love in exactly at exactly the same level and in the same ways as men.
You know? Right.
Mm-hmm. So I love the idea that it's not just the term itself, but the movement is enjoying a kind of renaissance with a Generation Z twist. I think that kids who are born, people who are coming of age now, like in their teens now, that's the next generation. They haven't been named yet.
So.
So I love that idea. So we're going to have in our time some kind of round table discussion where I'll have two or three guests who are all feminists from the different movements. One from the second wave, which was the 70s.
Right.
And
when did feminism come on the scene first?
Well, I think you'd have to term the first wave definitely 1920. It was a strictly one issue.
Oh, really? Way back then already?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was really, I mean, in the strict sense of the word, historically, it would really be for us. What about universal rights for us? So that was the first wave. And the second wave is the one that sounded for a while unsavory, but I don't know why. That's the second wave, Gloria Steinem, Ms. Magazine. It was the idea of the Equal Rights Amendment.
Right.
And that really accounted for a lot of the activism that remains to this day, because a lot of those women, many, many, are still alive. Hillary Clinton, for example, was really at the forefront of that movement.
Right.
So.
And that's it. But I think it had some unintended results, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think some people, like, for example, I think people, like, overcorrected, you know, which I'm saying.
Oh, I totally
which is
agree.
To say, you know, it's like women didn't have rights, and then, you know, people demanded, like, too much. And what I mean by that is there was little tolerance, I don't know how it is today, for women that do stay home and take care of their kids
and the
husband, you know. It was like they were being looked down upon. And, you know, and I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think you can still be a feminist and be a family woman.
Absolutely. And the two roles, I mean, to be a parent, to be a mom, and to work is those roles, the role of mother, you know, for those of us who have kids, are that is first. So you're always thinking about your kids anyway.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's true. Except, you know, I think some women put more emphasis on their career and stuff.
Right.
And maybe, you know, let the kids go. I don't know. I mean, I don't know anybody like that.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, you know, if you're going to value work more than taking care of your family,
exactly,
you're
going to
create a problem.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you're right. It's not a gender issue in the sense that both men and women can be either neglectful towards their kids or very loving and present.
That's true. Yeah.
So.
I know. I was very close with my kids when they were growing up and everything. But then a divorce always sabotages things, you know.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah, so. But I was very involved, you know. I mean, I'd get up in the middle of the night, change their diapers, feed them, things like that, you know. I remember my daughter in the beginning was just a screamer. So I would take her in the car seat. She was like a couple days old, and just drive her around so she would fall asleep with the motion and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then we found, and we couldn't figure out why she was screaming all the time, you know. And then we found, the doctor said she's not getting enough milk, you know. She's starving all the time. Because what we started doing is giving her, like, chamomile tea and stuff, you know. And that would relax her. That would calm her down. And then we realized she just was hungry all the time. So when you give her the tea, she felt better.
Yeah.
So
does she know that story?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know.
It's one of the great things that you get to remember these things and remember them fondly.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah, no, so. I do remember that.
Yeah.
I will say it's great, though, that now you can work remotely. Like, as a female, there's a lot of companies yes. where they allow you to work from home, so you can have both roles.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're saying it's not necessarily a good thing, though, and that's why Marissa Mayer from Yahoo, if you remember, there was a little controversy
yeah.
about
oh,
that.
Yeah.
When she asked people not to work at home anymore, come in and everything.
Right.
But, which makes sense, you know. I mean, if you're working, you're working. You got to be at the office, because I think a lot of the interaction between people is what creates innovation, you know.
Well, I think there should be like a work-life balance or maybe just a four-day work week.
I love that idea. I mean, I know people are – this may be a liberal versus conservative issue. I'm not sure. But you think about – you know, in Europe and a lot of European countries, they do better at that, at the work-life balance, where, you know, minimum number of vacation days are essentially, they're legislated.
Right.
I mean, they must be. And for here, I mean, we really haven't done that well in helping any working person achieve that balance in terms of vacation days.
Aren't we the most stressed out country?
I think
we work the hardest.
We work the hardest.
We also don't shut off. There's like...
Because
we don't have that mandatory like siesta in the middle of the day, or like,
oh, those are great. Have you ever like gone to Europe and just participated in that lifestyle?
Well, no, I didn't participate in it because I was on vacation, so it was like a limited amount of time there, and so like you have to use every hour while you're a tourist.
Oh, of course.
And so when they would shut down all the stores and restaurants, we're like,
what are we supposed to do now?
Sorry, I didn't get the memo, and my plans were to be active.
Yeah,
right. And you can appreciate though that the lifestyle of the people who were there. Yeah,
had I like signed up for all that, I would have been like, hold on, let me go lay down.
Yeah, exactly.
That wasn't part of the plan.
Well, I lived in France for about a year back in the 80s when Mitterrand was president.
Yeah.
And
Jean-Claude.
Speaking of eye issues, I actually had a medical, somewhat of a medical issue when I was there. I had, you know, terrible headaches and I needed glasses, I realized. And I just sort of got through a reference to a doctor, and the medicine, the medical care was great. And it was very cost effective for me being in that country. And I loved everything about France. I sort of have a lifelong love affair. But what's been troubling me lately, and I spoke about it with one of my guests, is the anti-Semitism in France, in particular in Spain. It's truly, it's disturbing and very telling about what they haven't, they being many European countries, haven't been dealing with.
Right. But the thing is, and the problem is Islam. And, you know, let's call it the way it is.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been reading about for a lot. And in fact, it's ironic you brought it up, because the past couple of days I've been reading about the Islamic extremism in Europe, and how France and the UK are the biggest exporters now of fighters to ISIS from Europe.
Yeah.
You know, and that's terrible because, but, you know, they're overwhelmingly, if not all, they're Muslims. You know, they're part of the Muslim culture that is not assimilated into the European culture. So they create like Sharia law in their neighborhoods. Even police are afraid to go there. And that's the thing. And, you know, we always qualify this by saying, look, not all Muslims are violent. Okay, fine. You know, but the religion itself calls for everybody to comply or else. You know, that's what it's about.
Right, and, right. It's the element of compliance. You're right.
Right, yeah. You know. And the thing is that they flood into Europe. I mean, we just heard about the ship that capsized with immigrants and stuff. That is tragic.
What was it, 700?
I think 900. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
900
people. That's a lot. But it just goes to show you how many people from the Middle East, from Africa, from Pakistan, you know, from everywhere. All the, from the many extreme Islamic places, they come to Europe because they're left alone to do what they want, you know.
Right.
So you're right. And there's a lot of anti-Semitism because where there's Islam, there's hatred for Jews. So that's not surprising at all. But it all boils down to the terrorist groups, you know, mainly Al-Qaeda and ISIS.
Yeah, and you're right. I think I think the leaders of those countries, for example, President Hollande of France, I mean, why aren't they, perhaps they are, and I haven't been up on it, but why aren't they standing up and really denouncing it?
Right. I'll tell you why. And because if you notice also the United Nations, every time there's fighting between the Palestinians and the Israelis, Israel gets blamed for everything because there's anti-Semitism everywhere. And the UN is made up of countries that have hated Israel for many years. And that's why these things happen. They forget. It's because there's too much... well, it goes down into politics and stuff. I think there's,
right.
there's too much liberal thinking that tries to be politically correct and everything, you know, and I think that's why it's happening. But I don't know. You seem to be on the left pretty much, no?
Yeah.
yeah. So that's why I don't want to bring it up.
No, it's okay. But actually, I love hearing all kinds of, you know, points of view and sides
right.
and things like that.
Good.
I'm a little, at this point, I don't know if any diehard conservatives maybe they'd be too afraid to come on my show, but I don't bite. I love you all. But actually, I do have, I mean, I sort of take, when I watch the news in the morning, obviously, but also at night, MSNBC, CNN, I can't bring myself to tolerate Fox, I'm sorry.
Really?
But MSNBC, CNN, and I actually take notes just because these are stories that I want to follow up on. Mm. So what are the big political issues and who are the major players in the news that day? What are the major themes? You know, what is Hillary talking about on the trail? What was Marco Rubio's? I do follow the Republican candidates.
Right.
So, you know, what are the Republican candidates talking about? When is this next one going to announce? And what is their spin on things going to be for 2016? So I do that. And yeah, I seem to be, I mean, in terms of its focus, I like to say, you know, I like Rachel Maddow's style a lot. You know, she's very warm. So personally, I really like her. I can't pretend to be anywhere near as brilliant, but I'm inspired by her warmth, her you know, attempt to kind of get the full story. And also, there's the CNN show This Life with Lisa Ling, where she kind of takes an aspect of life that is strange, weird, disturbing, exotic, anything, or all of the above, and she'll sort of interview a lot of people and travel.
Right. Is that show still on? Because I watched a couple of episodes.
Yeah, she did one on sugar daddies.
Yes, I saw that one.
Yeah, that was... that was an interesting one, and she did one on you know, child geniuses, or these parents who are trying to turn their babies into super baby geniuses, and all this stuff. And so she gets to sort of travel around and interview a lot of people. Well, I don't travel around and I don't interview a lot, but one at a time. So I've interviewed, I interviewed my journalist friend on anti-Semitism in Europe, but I wanted to interview actually Bell Knox, you know, the college student.
Yes. Porn star.
Yeah, I wanted to interview her, and it looked like it might be possible that she'd be a call-in interviewee.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, she actually is very strongly for Rand Paul for president.
Really?
Yeah, and I think that's interesting because she calls herself libertarian, which I can respect. I mean, that's a distinct belief, right? It's a distinct philosophy. And so I would love to hear that, but he is very... So he's very, in terms of civil rights, pretty, you know, fairly conservative in a way that not everyone would agree. In other words, he might be anti-porn.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Whereas I sort of come from the idea that, you know, porn is a, you know, whether I would choose to be a part of it, it's a very healthy, you know, expression.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Yeah.
You know, it does let people express themselves in many ways, whether you're the actor or the viewer.
Exactly.
You know, and that's pretty cool, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's cool. So, yeah, because I was going to ask you, what is your interest in a porn star? You know, I mean.
Oh, yeah. Because, it's
about
the politics.
I mean, they're not hard to get on shows. You know, they all love to be on radio shows.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. And she talks about the economics of her choice, right? Because because she began with, you know, a couple $1,000s a month due from student loans that she could not pay back. So from a strictly economic standpoint, that, you know, flipping burgers at McDonald's wasn't going to cut it. Mm-hmm. She needed to do something. And so right or wrong, this is the type of work that is valued in a different way,
right?
From pure economics, from that standpoint. So it's pretty interesting. So so good. You've inspired me to kind of pursue that.
Yeah, no, I mean, know, that, and she might play hard to get because she's more known than most actresses.
Right, right.
Just because, I mean, at least in the mainstream, she's more known because she took a step from being like a Yale student.
She's at Duke University.
Student.
But still,
And went into porn and stuff. So she made like headlines and stuff. Like it's a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't see what the big deal is because many college students become porn stars.
Oh,
I'm not, well, maybe not many, but some do.
Right.
And, So, yeah, it's not unusual. That's why I don't understand it. You know? But so, Cheryl, tell us what it is that you do.
Well, in real life, I'm a teacher. Yeah.
Oh, you're a teacher.
And I've been, but I've been doing radio for quite a long time. I mean, since college days in Poughkeepsie, New York, and then I had a show on Blog Talk, and then here. So I've always done that, and I got so I've been teaching for about 20 years. First teaching theater and speech at John Jay College in New York, and I was involved in hosting some events and also producing and directing strictly for college and off. Way off Broadway, like Rhode Island off Broadway. Yeah, like really off. But that's always been a love, but never a love that I wanted to pursue professionally. Yeah. I never wanted to be a professional actress, but I loved speaking, love, you know, broadcasting. But I began as a teacher in the 90s at John Jay College. And then I wanted to come back to California because this is my home state. I, you know, grew up here. And I missed it. I had certain relatives I really missed, and my grandmother's last few years of her life. So I came back, and I've been here ever since.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And once you have a kid, you're kind of tethered. I'm kidding. No, I really, I love LA too. It's, you know, it's, there's no place like it. And so I will probably be here forever with my geriatric driving style, you know, driving like the little side streets, you know, when I'm 70 in 2 years. Just kidding. I'm not that old. But yeah.
Yeah. Now, are you still teaching now?
I still am.
And what grades do you teach?
I teach high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's that like?
It is. Well, for years I taught at a public school, which is, you know, I think what flipped it for me was initially it's really as horrifying as they say. I mean, it's really a shock to recognize that everything that you hear, it's about a million times worse. And I don't necessarily mean the kids. It's the conditions. Mm. So I think teaching in a public school either makes you become very, very sort of straight ahead and kind of narrow in terms of you just can't think about all the reasons why things aren't going so well for our public school students, overcrowded classrooms and et cetera. Or if you care a lot and you find yourself feeling a lot in response to that, you become super political, super politicized. Right. I mean, what are we not doing to take care of our kids? And right. so that the political fire starts to kind of light you up and you have to do something about it. And then I went to get, just to fulfill a lifelong dream, I got my PhD in theater from UCLA, still not wanting to perform, but to write about it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very nice. So now you teach private school?
Private school, yeah. Small private school.
And that's easier, right?
It's easier. There are different, there are sort of gives and takes to that, but essentially it becomes the idea of teaching as mentoring and the ability to come up with more creative projects for the kids is a great thing. You can assign them to do their own little radio show, you know, with their own equipment, you know, about recreate a broadcast that people might have heard back during World War II or something. So you can kind of take any medium that they have available to them and have them create.
Right.
So that kind of range of creative possibilities has lent teaching that kind of extra spark for me. Yeah. So,
you know, for a couple of years or maybe a year, I was a substitute teacher in the LA school district.
You've done everything.
What's
You've done every job.
I would love to ask you what's the most amazing job you've ever had?
Well, I used to do computer animation, too, and that was very exciting.
That is neat. But you were a teacher. I can see where you would be a cool teacher.
Well, but that's the thing, is that I really wanted to teach. So I started as a sub, and but it never occurred to me that because I'm a sub, people are not going to take me seriously. The kids aren't, right?
Yeah.
But it's not like a regular teacher. You know, you come in there, even if you want to teach, they don't have respect for you yet. You have to earn it. And so, but what I discovered is middle school is harder than high school.
Oh, there's just little hormones on legs.
Yeah, because high school, you can connect with the students. You can talk to them, and they're more mature, you know, so they don't behave like crazy as much.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they have other things that they have problems with. But middle school is out of control, man, especially in the school district. I mean, I would be like a policeman, you know. In the classroom, I couldn't teach anything.
Yeah.
But then you'd go into the magnet classes, and, you know, those are like kids that are good students.
Yeah.
And
I was in the magnet.
Where are you?
Yeah.
So these kids mean business, and it's a lot easier to teach them.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Exactly. And ironically, teachers have to work their way into those magnets. So the newest teachers become, they're sort of the sacrificial lambs to all that is so dysfunctional.
Right. And there's a lot of it, huh? Do you think, I mean, look, it's like I understand diversity and everything, but do you think it's good to mix so many economic classes together?
That's an interesting question because... And, you know, there's almost a kind of de facto, you know, economic segregation a little bit because, you know, in, like, let's say...
You can only go in the area where you live or something.
Right,
unless there's this...
permits or charters.
Right,
like that.
Yeah.
It's an interesting question. I mean, I would say the liberally part of me wants to say, yeah, the more the merrier and all together.
Right.
And then, of course, there is always that... That tension that comes from, you know, the
And there's
classes.
Envy, I think, and things like that, you know. And I think the kids that have less are envious and maybe they're going to start bullying and things like that. Not necessarily, but what I'm saying is...
It's kind of like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Because if you keep them separate, then they only know what they know.
Right.
So exactly. That's a good point.
And that's not a good thing either. I totally agree with you, you know. But let's tell the real truth. And that is that parents are concerned with their kids because they do bring kids from more violent neighborhoods in the city. And they bring them all the way over here. And suddenly this school becomes violent.
You know. And
so I'm not making it up. I mean, this is reality.
Yeah.
You know,
but
so
then
what
what's
do?
The solution?
Well, I'm not in the solution part yet.
Right.
I'm still telling you what's going on, you know.
And even the, you're right. I mean, what is the solution? Because it may be that the answer to solving it is far beyond the scope of what a school can do. It needs to be a buy-in from so many other places that it feels so overwhelming.
Yeah, because apparently they do this thing where they want to integrate students together so there aren't any differences, you know, but or maybe so the good students will influence the less, or the ones that are not willing to play the game, you know. And the thing is, so you bring them from another part of town into here. Now, I'm not saying they're bad students, but they come from areas where you solve a lot of problems with violence.
Right.
So they're hoping that the good kids will influence them. But what happens is the other way around.
Yeah.
The good kids start going bad, you know. And all I'm saying, again, this is not my opinion. This is a fact.
Right.
This is what has happened in L.A., at least. So
I mean, the great part is, though, then you get those stories where the kid left the town they're from and they got great grades and their goal was to get out.
Right.
Because they saw they could.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So
exactly.
You can't sort of like it. You don't win either way.
I think they need to improve the schools in the less fortunate areas. That's what they need to do.
Yeah. And they need to. One of the reasons, I mean, they say that teachers are not paid well. Teachers who work at these schools, let's say in Compton or South Central or wherever, they are very new. So understandably, they're still going through that sort of trial by fire process of, you know, learning. And how are they going to get the really, really experienced teachers down there? I mean, you have to pay them more for an extra, however many, $25,000-$30,000 a year. I know that sounds like a lot, but would I have gone to those schools to teach? Yes, I would have.
Yeah, but many people wouldn't. Right,
many people wouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a major problem, you know, and I don't know what the answer is at this point, but they really need to discuss this because this doesn't work.
Right.
It really doesn't work, you know.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, but sometimes the negative, overpowers the positive.
Yeah. And then you have examples of all kinds of kids in all kinds of places.
Yeah,
further complicating the whole thing. But But yeah, I have a really inspiring guest coming up this Friday. Though.
Let's hear about it.
Yeah.
By the way, we're talking to Cheryl Lubin. Her show is In Our Times. She's a host here on LA Talk Radio almost 2 years now, we just discovered. And a great show on Fridays, Friday afternoon at 3. right here on LA Talk Radio. So check it out. And so tell us about the upcoming guest.
Oh, well, this guest, I'm very excited because I saw on CNN maybe a few weeks ago, perhaps a month ago, this actress Victoria Rowell. She was on the soap Days of Our Lives for many years. She played Drusilla Winters, and she was this iconic character on that show. I watched it from time to time. I didn't follow it consistently, but I did sort of, I was aware of it. And she's also been on several different, many different movies, and, you know, and she has been off the air or off of Days of Our Lives for about maybe 4 or 5 years now, but she is, she tried different remedies, but she is, filing suit. She has filed suit against CBS and Sony for racial discrimination and for retaliatory measures. They are claiming, or she feels that she is being punished. They won't let her come back to the show because she has been very outspoken about the lack of diversity in the upper ranks of daytime soaps, head writers. And if you've got a situation where 40%, or if not more, of the daytime soap operas, the audience is made up of African Americans. I mean, the measurements, the audience measurements have proven that. They have not really given people of color a chance to rise within the ranks or to be given a shot at the top writers' jobs in that particular medium on a widespread level. So in 73 years or so, there's really only been one, you know, writer, head writer of a soap.
Yeah.
So there's really been virtually nothing. So she's been very outspoken, and, you know, there were different remedial measures and things, conciliatory measures tried behind the scenes, but essentially she is now suing them. So it's a very high-profile case. She's been on CNN. She's been on MSNBC, and I kind of called up her press agent and said, I've got a law degree, I've got a radio show, and I'm really fascinated by high-profile legal cases that really tell us something about society.
Right. Right.
So I look forward to really listening to her story, because she's quite inspiring, because she grew up in poverty and made it all the way to best-selling author and, you know, head of a...
And that's what I'm saying, you know, and that's why I have a little problem with this, because people that want to make it usually do.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, I don't sympathize with people who paint themselves as victims. Because, you know, because, I mean, minorities, I'll give you a million examples of people from minorities that have made it really big. I mean, we even have a black president. You know, what more do you need to show you that we do have diversity? And if you put in the effort yourself, you're going to get there. Now, I agree that for some minorities, it might be harder. But it's not impossible. And, you know, the thing is that I'm seeing so many, you know, I mean, I'm heartened to see so many black people really haven't achieved great things. You know, Hispanics as well, Asians, you know, incredible things that they've accomplished. So how can I feel bad for the entire race or for the entire group, you know? It's not... you know, and I think we saw that affirmative action doesn't work very well, or does it? What do you think? We're out of time.
Okay, I'll ponder that, though.
Yeah, we'll have to bring you back.
Okay.
I like you because you're a leftist, but easy to talk to.
Oh,
you
know? Yeah. And I have to say, I like the fact that these microphones look very phallic. Is that okay to say? They really do.
Good.
I like
well,
them.
You might as well. We talked about porn.
Yeah, exactly. Bringing it full circle there.
Yeah, there you go. Sharon Lubin, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's been fun. Great talking to you guys.
And so I guess you guys can contact her just by going to our website, right?
Yeah, go to
you have Facebook
page. Facebook and Twitter, and
okay, Sharon Lubin. All you have to do is look for her, and very interesting, always entertaining.
Yeah, always
and we'll
great
have to bring
you
back soon so we can talk about these things.
Yeah, absolutely, anytime.
And you're an intellectual, and I enjoy talking to you.
And have a great show on Friday.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I'll listen to it.
Okay,
and see. Maybe I'll call in and challenge her a little bit.
Okay,
no, I don't want to put you on the spot. I know.
Oh, it's all,
good. All right. Well, everybody, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you, Sam.
See everybody tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.